welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
I'm Bobby.
And I'm Chris.
All right, so you may notice that I'm talking first today. We're doing a little change up here. I don't know if, Bobby, you want to go into what's going on for a little bit here?
Nope, all you. No, I got this. So we're switching up a little bit just because I got a new job. So I will be moving up to the DC area, not far from where we are now, but I have no clue what my situation is going to be for the next few weeks. I'll be on the cast for like the next two, maybe three episodes, and then I'll be off into limbo for a while until we get everything set up there and everything. So Jerry's going to be editing, so if anything sounds bad, it's Jerry's fault. Alex is going to be hosting, so if he does anything dumb, obviously that's his fault.
All right, so what else have you been up to, Jerry? You know, we know what Bobby's got going on. He's got a new job. What have you been up to?
So I went and played a Legacy IQ up in, where is it, Springfield, Virginia, at, what is that store called again, Curio Cavern. So what happened was, Traffic was miserable the whole way up. It was the Good Friday, it was Easter weekend, I think it was, or something like that. It was a 120-mile trip, shouldn't take more than 3 hours. So I planned it, you know, leave at 2 o'clock. I'll be there by 6 at the worst. Man, I didn't show up till 6:30, and when I got there, I got signed up, and I got a round one loss for being late. I proceeded to go 3-1 in the remaining four rounds and missed cut the top eight, finishing ninth with Storm.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you would have showed up on time, you would have had it in the bag, pretty much?
Pretty much, yeah. The only player I lost to was a Death and Taxes player, and that's because I got spicy with my sideboard and took out Empty the Warrens.
Oh, he took out the card that's good against him? Yeah, I mean, that happens to all of us. My favorite story on that is I took out a Norrod out of the sideboard of a Legacy deck the night before a tournament. In my first two rounds, I played against Mud. That was great.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we were there, there were no Death and Taxes players. It was four Miracles players, and Storm Miracles is 60-40 my favorite game one, 65-35 my favorite game two, because my board is a little bit better than his. So I was really gaming against Miracles.
Gotcha. Which is usually a good call. It's a pretty high up there deck. But what have you been up to, Chris?
I've been playing Modern. So we went to just a small event on Monday. Went X and 1 for that with Boggles. And then Wednesday, I spiced it up and asked if Jerry could sleeve up Blue-Red Storm for me to play. So I spent about 3.5-4 hours playing Storm, and I like it.
I mean, that's a big jump for Boggles. Yeah. Super linear year to not.
Yeah, I like it, though. I like it a lot. I'm going to probably start picking up the pieces. I'm not looking forward to the, what's the blue-red fetch?
Scalding Tarns.
They're going to be expensive, but, I mean, you're going to need them throughout your Magic tournament. I don't want to say career, but you're fun. So slowly.
I mean, it's always nice to have all the fetches. That way, like, that's the majority of any deck price is the fetches. So, like, you can just switch up to any deck as long as you have, like, playset of each fetch. It's so easy.
And, I mean, I had the other expensive ones. I had Misty Rainforest and Verdant Catacombs. Because I was playing Boggles back before we had all these fetches that we have in Standard now. And you just had to have those to fetch for green. Yeah. So I'll bite it on some Scalding Tarns and pick them up. And, I mean, Storm's not that expensive of a deck. And it's actually really fun. I don't know. I liked it.
Good. Glad you're seeing your branch out on that one.
Yeah.
Let's get in some news here. So they're making a change to pre-releases on Modo. The way it's working now is it used to be it costs a little bit more and the prize payout wasn't very good. So they've changed it towards the same price as like a normal sealed event or a normal draft. But then also with the sealed events, they've changed it to where you get a foil rare or mythic, kind of like the pre-release in paper where you get this extra cards. They added that to Modo, which is really nice. What do you guys think about this?
Yeah, I can dig it. I've still never done a pre-release on Modo. I'm not really sure why. I feel like pre-release is like, to me, it's a fun social event. So doing it on Modo seems kind of counterintuitive. So I'll be honest, this doesn't really affect me tons. But it does seem like there's more value in the paper version. So it's cool they're trying to line those two up a little bit more.
I hate to be a goon that says the same thing, but I agree with Bobby on this one. I've never done an online pre-release because I do feel it is a social event. However, with the are the dates still offset each other from online to paper with pre-release?
Yeah, the pre-release on Moto is April 15th, so it's like 2 weeks after or whatever.
Fantastic. So I'll give it a try. I'm willing. I'm a willing participant.
Yeah, I there is that disparity between, like, because paper, you're excited. It's the first time you get the cards. You're getting them early. Like, you need them for FNM the next week. Like, you want to get the cards. You don't want to just there, so you just pre-order everything. And that's kind of lame. So you want to get the cards. And we're on Moto, like, it's already 2 weeks behind. So, like, it's, like, the excitement's not there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing, because and then there's also, like, the fun of, I love it when you're sitting around and, like, especially when the expeditions were in and you get to see what everybody else is opening, and there's just, it's like, it's a fun whirl of an event, and online, there's just, you're missing all that.
Yeah, it feels like pre-release is designed for, like, the midnight excitement, like, you're all tired, and, like, any little thing that happens is just great, like, oh, somebody got an expedition, sweet. Like, I think it's just so much better in that format than online, for sure. They're also now making another change here where April 18th, the Monday after the pre-release on Moto, it used to be Moto was the same as paper. They wait a full week till it was legal after the pre-release, and they do like a release events during the week. They're getting ready to release events. And also on Monday, cards are becoming legal on Moto. A little bit earlier than a paper, even though they're offset, if that makes sense. And then also they're switching the prize packs with that earlier. So what do you guys think about paying out earlier in this way?
Yeah, so it's like it's still after paper's legal, but it's a different time gap. Like, it's only like what, the day after pre-release is over instead of having to wait a week on paper. I mean, that's cool. Yeah, like, yeah. Since you're already kind of behind on pre-release, it seems like you might as well go ahead and make it legal that following Monday. It might be tricky for players because, I mean, there's not going to be much availability of these cards since pre-release is starting that weekend, and then bam. But I don't think there's not going to be any major events other than, like, dailies and stuff throughout the week, so it's not really affecting anything huge.
The card availability isn't as big an issue on Moto because there are bots and stuff that just, you know, get packs, and you can always find a bot that has stuff. So, like, that availability issue isn't as big on online, in my opinion.
Yeah, no shipping necessary, nothing like that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think it's pretty good because if you're someone who you can't go to the pre-release event, but you can hop into one of these things and, you know, just knock it out real quick. Or you can still, you can, even if you can't go to pre-release, you can still try and get prize payout in these packs and start trying to build up your cards. Because if you work like nights, you'll probably never catch one of these. So it'll be cool.
Yeah, no, I can dig it. And, I mean, releasing the cards earlier, like, might as well, right? I mean, there's no real reason to make it wait a week other than trying to imitate paper, but you're already behind time-wise, so you might as well just go ahead and make them playable.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out here is this is based on, like, losing the release events and having pre-release with, like, the actual rare card foil, like, you get in paper and stuff, was based off feedback. Like, it was based off, they sent out a survey last year, people submitted it, so, like, this is just another point that when Wizards does a survey, do it, guys. Like, they're actually listening to people's feedback. So if you have anything to say, say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're kind of getting to that age with technology where it's like they really can listen to the consumers, like, actively. I mean, more and more companies are doing this. Like, I mean, this is a weird tangent, but I've been playing The Division an ungodly amount of hours, and they've done great just listening to consumers, like, what the players are saying, what they want, and I'm glad that Wizards is doing the same thing. Like, with social media and all these different accounts, it's easier now than ever before, so they might as well utilize it. So, yeah, man, make your voice heard.
Yeah, for sure. I think they're doing a great job on that, too. Moving on here, we got... I just want to make some notes on checklist cards for people doing pre-releases this weekend. You know, people getting excited for it. Maybe not this weekend when you're listening to it, but for us, it's this weekend. Some notes on checklist cards. We're a little bit more experienced with it now because of Magic Origins, but before that, it had been a while, and some people may not have played with checklist cards and things before. But there's going to be two different checklist cards in Shadows, one for Commons / Uncommons and one for the Rares and the Mythics, whereas in Origins, we just said one for all the Planeswalkers. So there are going to be two different ones, so you have to make sure you have the right one. And then also, the use of checklist cards is all or nothing. I actually found this out when I was playing a tournament, when I was playing Rally, because I had four Jaces in there and then like one Liliana. So I had checklists for the Jaces because I flipped them so much more, and I just had a Liliana, our Heretical Healer, in the deck. But if you're using checklists for anything, you have to use it for all. It doesn't matter if it's the same card. So if you have a checklist, you have to be using it for everything.
That's a...
And with...
That's a weird rule. Sorry, my mind just immediately tries to go to what are they trying to prevent, and I can't think of anything.
I can think of something like more of a safety thing, you know, card damage, like if or something like that, possibly. Maybe they should just go to, hey, you have to use checklist cards, you know. That would be, I think that's what should happen, you know. Because, you know, a couple years ago, I had an incident where I was shuffling up a deck. I handed it to my opponent, and, you know, he shuffled it up, passed it off, slid it, and then it hit, like, hit my playmat, and it bent one of my cards. You know, something like that, as simple as that, could be prevented just by requiring people to have it, even though there's no requirement yet. But I guess it also keeps things, you know, equitable, you know. If you one all or all have to be one,
that's
way or
all
the
I
other.
Can think of is, like, yeah, just
keep things clean
it, but anyway, sorry.
I think it's a little bit so there can't be any, like, you can't somehow, like, slide a hand, switch it to another checklist or something. But also, like, going with the wear and tear there is, if you have, like, the cards in there, like Flip Jace's in there, and you're constantly every game pulling them out and turn it around and putting it back in, it's going to wear and tear these sleeves. They could be more worn, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I could. Well, but even then, let's
yeah,
go on. There's no reason
kind
to
of pushing it, yeah.
worry about this, yeah.
Maybe if they hear feedback, I would absolutely love to see foil checklist cards. I know it sounds goofy to you all, but I would like it.
I mean, foils in general are goofy to me, but
there
as well
out there
at this point.
Want it, though. I agree that would be a good thing. And then also with this too, make sure you own all the copies. Like, don't have three checklist cards and two, you know, physical cards in your deck box or whatever. That's also bad.
Yeah,
so.
That's a sentence that gets said every time.
In deck check, in deck check. If you have checklist cards, they want to see all the copies of the card as well. You can't just hide them.
Yeah, exactly. You can't use one copy for everything, you know. Even if like it's legendary and there can never be two in play, but you still have to have all the copies. Moving on here, we got intro deck lists released. They suck like always. I don't know. When's the last time you guys bought an intro deck list or like intro pack?
I didn't even know they made them still.
I thought they were done with these.
Yeah.
No, that is the event decks they got rid of.
Event decks.
Wait, there's a difference? There's a difference? Like,
yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
They're all pretty sketchy decks anyways. Why are we even playing them?
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to think back of the last time I got one. Like, I know I bought the rat one in... Kamigawa said a jit in it.
Yeah,
like,
Rat's Nest.
A money card in it.
Rat's Nest and Fun with Fungus back in Time Spiral because it has Pendlehaven.
Yeah. There, like, I remember those, and I was trying to think, like, beyond that, I'm like, I think when I first started, there was a blue one in, like, I think it was Fifth Dawn, and it had Trinket Mages and Skull Clamp and, like, like that kind of stuff in it.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I know what one you're talking about. The blue-black one where it had all the super cheese artifact affinity for shenanigans in it. Like, it had at least two of each artifact land, had its own little thought cast, all that super cheese.
Well, that's not bad,
I think that was the last good one. Like, I don't know if... Like, Wizards has kind of set this precedence where they're getting away with event decks. They suck, so, like... Intro packs next, maybe? I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know why.
The mono black event deck was decent at the time. It was decent.
It was decent, but even then.
That was an event deck, though. I'm talking about intro packs here. Like, they're just never been a good intro pack.
Yeah, but I can't think that I've ever bought an intro pack.
No. I mean, I think they just exist because new players need something like that to gravitate towards. I mean... Deck builders toolkits are horrible for new players. Boxes are, like, most products are bad, but Magic's really not a new player friendly game anyway.
No.
But, you know, I guess they need something on the shelf. But yeah, this thing sucks. What's up next?
Shut down.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. It was one little. So news was pretty short today this week for the most part, because we're in this weird spot where, like, nothing's going on in Modern because everybody's waiting for the ban on Monday. You know, nothing's going on in Standard because there's rotation, you know, next week, pre-release, or this week, and everybody's ready for pre-release. So there wasn't a whole lot there. So we are going to talk about some more stuff here. We're going to talk about some random things, you know, maybe goals that you can set for yourself to try to achieve these in Shadows over Innistrad, you know, sealed draft, pre-release, things like that.
Nice.
So the first one we'll talk about here is Skulk and Invocation of Saint Draft. So... Invocation of Saint Draft was the enchantment that gives you the Geist of Saint Draft ability. When it attacks, you get a 4/4 angel. And Skulk is almost unblockable. I mean, I say almost because they can block it, but it has to have less power, so it's not going to die in combat. So there's no fear of attacking into this. So what do you guys think of this?
Yeah, hilarious. I mean, like, it's a Geist of St. Traff that you can swing into anything, so I can dig it. The angel's going to come out every turn and hit him over the top. Awesome.
I mean, you put it on anything indestructible that exists. I mean, I'm just going on Invocation of St. Traff. I mean, build your own Geist. What's better than that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other card to build with is Autumnal Gloom, the enchantment. Once it has Delirium, it flips into a creature, and it's a 4/4 trample hexproof. Like, that seems sweet to put this on, too.
That is a Geist of St. Traft, and then some at that point.
Yeah, exactly. If you get both of these cards, feel free to ruin someone's magic night. Like, just send them home sad.
Oh, no, if I got beat with that, I wouldn't be mad. I'd be like, all right, I deserve to lose.
But you know someone's going to do it, and it's going to be one of the players who only comes out for pre-releases, and they're going to have that, like, puppy dog beat-up look on their face.
And he's going to have, and he's going to lose to someone who, he's going to lose to someone who goes to the slaughter. So, I mean, it's all good. It's whatever.
Hey, it's a stack of creature, though. So if they have multiple creatures, it also protects it, you know.
That's true. I like it, though. I mean, I like it.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, the problem with enchantments have always been, oh, you get 2-for-1 or whatever. In Limited, it's not as much. There's not as much removal. And then because Skulk is a mechanic, like I said, it's almost unblockable. Like, putting it on there is sweet. Yeah. Like, it may be unblockable if they just have a bunch of fatties. They can't block your, like, one power Skulk guy, and you're like, ha, gets you for 4 in the air in addition. Like,
bonus points if it has Vigilance.
Right. Get to do all the things. Another one here is Avisary, Missionary, and Neglected Harem.
Wombo combo. It makes,
yeah. So the Missionary is a 3/3 for 4 that flips when it's equipped into a 4/4 creature that exiles a creature, like Fiend Hunter style. The Heirloom is an artifact that gives +1/+1. It costs 1 and equips for 1. And then it flips if the creature it's equipped to transforms, and then it flips into giving +3/+3 first strike and equips for 3/+1. So just equipping this just immediately flips both, giving you a 7/7 first striker that exiles a creature.
Seems good.
That's a block. Like, I was looking at Neglected Heirloom, and that card's almost constructed playable if enough flip cards are worth playing in constructed.
Yeah, it's a funny
card. I think it's gonna be based on werewolves. Like, how good are the werewolves, and do they want this? Like, that's where the most transforms come from.
Yeah, and definitely. I mean, I could honestly see this with the Heir of Falconwrath with this. That's just super powerful in itself. It's a possibility. It's a great...
Oh, yeah, the Delver. So they make it a 5/4 flying first striker? That seems good.
Yep, looks good. I'm all about it. Just different things you can do with it. The card's almost there. TikTok. It requires someone with, some play on it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's super sweet, too. Like, I like the idea of a flip equipment. Some other, like, synergies with equipment is there's a Strength of Arms, which costs 1 white instant speed. Target creature gets +2/+2, and you get a 1/1 token if you control equipment. And then also there's Militant Inquisitor, which is a 2/3 for 3 in white, and then it gets +1/+0 for each equipment you control. So there are other things you can do besides this just super cute little combo. Like, there's going to be an equipment deck. So, I mean, that's cool, too.
Yeah.
Like, I think what I'm going to might do in a draft, you know, just to see if I can get away with it, is I'm going to high-prioritize equipment spells, and I'm just going to start pulling them all just so I can get the equipment deck. I think it's something you can do, and it's something to look into.
Yeah, I mean, there's 8 equipments in Shadows, not counting the creature that turns into the equipment, the Scarecrow. Then when it dies, it comes back, and it's an equipment. But, yeah, it's definitely a possibility to try to draft that. I'm wondering if it won't get finally pushed enough because we have Relic Seeker in Standard, the one that hits, gets renowned, and then pulls down an equipment out of your deck. Like, I'm wondering if it can't just get pushed enough for Standard play.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, that's worth checking out for sure. Just got to see how they all work together.
Yeah, I see if the equipments are worth it enough for sure. Yeah. Also, another one is Duskwatch Recruiter and himself. So, like... He's just a built-in combo with himself. He's a 2-drop bear for, you know, 1 and a green for a 2/2 that it's a werewolf, so it flips if nothing is cast and flips back if 2 are cast. Then he has an ability that costs 3. You look at the top 3 cards of your library, put a creature from there into your hand. So the natural play pattern on this card is to cast it on 2. If your opponent does nothing, it flips. Sweet. If they do something, sure, on your turn, you just pay 3, activate his ability, pass turn, he flips. So, like, he kind of flips himself, which is interesting. And on the flip side, creatures cost one less. He's a 3/3. Creatures cost one less. So then on your turn, creatures one less. He could probably jam two creatures, flip them back, and then just rinse and repeat.
Nice. Yeah, I like this card. I honestly didn't really put all this together when I was looking at this card either, but that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just like the natural curve of he's a 2-drop with a 3 ability that wants to flip when nothing's cast. It's just
give you something design, to do, but not cast a card. Yeah, I like it.
I think it might be a little, like, this might be a pack one, pick one in a lot of instances versus your rare in a draft pool because it's its own solo card engine, which is super powerful. No, it's uncommon.
No, it's uncommon. Wow. Yeah.
That's a pretty sweet uncommon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bear, and it turns into a 3/3, but even then, like, even if you just, like, play it on two as a bear, it's other bears in the format, so if you're on the play, your bear came down first, so it's better than theirs, and then, you know, it's going to flip into a 3/3 on three, so it keeps up power and toughness-wise on turn three. Like, it doesn't get outclassed, is what I'm trying to say there.
But plus, I mean, digging for creatures in a limited format is really good.
Yeah, like, it almost, like, I don't want to, like, jinx it and talk to you soon, but it almost has like a pack rat feel, but like it's its own engine and just does its own thing.
Yeah,
like you just play this on turn two and go.
Yeah, not quite as busted, but very similar. I get the comparison, definitely.
I think it's just gonna be a card that you can just play this and then just let it do its thing, and that's gonna win you a game. But I think that's pretty much does it for this one. So when we come back, we're gonna talk about we're gonna do a where are they now kind of segment. We're gonna talk about some stuff we've talked about in the past, and then updated with it with Shadows of Innistrad and kind of what's going on since then. So we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're going to do where are they now, what's going on, and things we've talked about in the past and stuff like that. Let's get started with some power creep. That was one we talked about not too long ago. Continue to talk about things. We did it for battle. So we haven't talked about with the Gatewatch or Shadows of the Innistrad. So if there's anything in those, nice. Yeah. So we'll start off with Thing in the Ice. That card seems sweet and Delver Strategies, Blue Moon, Blue White Control. What do you guys think?
Oh wow, you completely I look at the notes here and you're missing the strategy I'm on with this card. This goes right into Storm decks as another alternate win con. I mean, you get to chain a bunch of spells, trip it. Flip all your dudes back to your hand, so in case you fizzle, I still got a 7/8. I think it's a 7/8, correct, guys?
When it flips, it's 7/8.
It's a 7/8. I get a 7/8 beat stick for days, and a lot of decks can't deal with that. So it's.
I mean, Path is still pretty good, and also it's Abrupt Decayable. So there are answers. It's not the end all be all, but I guess are you gonna run it as an alternative to Empty the Warrens?
Yep. I mean, it can run along as well as it can run alongside the Empty the Warrens. Say you just can't chain off a bunch of spells together because they have an answer to your Past in Flame shenanigans, you know? Oh, look, here's 8 tokens and a Thing in the Ice that flipped in response to you casting your storm counters. So it works out. It's how I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Delver strats are wanting to play because the flip side of Delver is a horror. Insectile Aberration is a horror, so it doesn't get bounced. So there's some synergy there. I mean, I'm looking forward to playing a Blue Moon because I get to bounce all the things that came under the moon and then maybe lock them off with some more cards. Also, just having a pseudo board wipe is sweet, and it's a fast clock, which is what I want. So,
yeah, I mean, looking at it from a power creep standpoint, though, I think it's kind of a hard card to gauge because, I mean, the effect is so kind of, I don't want to call it weird because it's pretty straightforward, but there's not really anything to compare it against, really, right? There's no precedent for this card, but it seems very powerful.
I mean, it's its own fair way of Upheaval Tog. That's the way I see it. Instead of bouncing all lands, it bounces all other creatures. So it's its own built-in, hey, I got my own Upheaval, I got my own Tog, fight me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's closer to Evacuation because it bounces all creatures, but Evacuation bounces all creatures, and you get to keep a 70. So, it's better than Evacuation, and that was a pretty good card in Limited and stuff, so.
And what was the CMC on that?
It was a 5-drop instant.
Yeah, see, but I guess that's what I'm mostly looking at, this is a 2-drop, but there's some delay built in, but building around it, decreases that delay. It's a pretty sweet card. I like it a lot from a design standpoint, but I definitely think it's much, much more powerful than creatures we saw, even 3, 4, 5 sets ago.
Yeah, I mean, I consider it, I compare it to Wall of Omens. Wall of Omens is an 0/4 that comes in for 2 Eldrazi card, and this does way more than that in the long game. So. Yeah.
yeah, a little less. It's it doesn't give you the instant satisfaction, but when it hits, it hits.
It's a long con.
Yeah.
Another interesting combo with it, if you're just curious, if you have Vampire Hexmage.
No,
this is real. This is real, man.
EQ with Hexmage.
You get you get Vampire Hexmage just like the old Dark Depths combo. Same concept. Yep. Sack it, bust all the ice counters, flip it. Let's go to town.
Nice.
So another one I want to talk about here is the Gitrok Monster. I talked about it before. I'm a fan of this card. But so decks looking to play this are like Loam Assault, Pox kind of thing. Dredge is looking at it. And I just want any deck with a Crucible and Ghost Quarter. Like, I want to see that deck make a move because that's sweet.
Yeah.
And you mentioned those strategies. When Twin got banned, you know, those strategies were almost unplayable because Twin just kind of said, hey, I kind of beat you because you don't have really any good, meaningful interaction with it. Now that it's gone, the strategies come back, and it just, you gave it a five drop powerhouse. That's not the that weird what was the giant called, the three mana giant that mills you till you hit a non-creature non-land, and for every land it goes in it gets bigger. It's two red and one, comes out as a 2/2. You mill until you hit a non-creature, non-land, and it gets +1/+1 counters equal to the number of lands you lost that way. So you don't have to play that thing because it was kind of awful because it did just die to Abrupt Decay, and it died to Lightning Bolt in response to its own trigger. So I don't know. I think this is a really good replacement for that card.
Yeah. I mean, it's sweet, like, because it's any time a land is put, draw a card. So if you dredge, like, say you dredge a Golgari Drave Troll, hit like two lanes, you get to draw two cards, and look, there's more dredge triggers.
Yay.
Yeah. Shenanigans.
This card does enough pseudo busted things that it's got to do busted things when paired with the right stuff. Like, there's just something bad is gonna come of this.
Like, there's a deck there, especially in like with like the card is still in standard. Molten Vortex. Pay one red, pitch the land, deal two. And then Seismic Assault in Modern, like the three-drop enchantment that says the same thing, pitch a land. So there you get to pitch a land, deal two, and draw a card. Like,
so pitch a land, Life from Loam, play Life from Loam, pitch three lands, Life from Oops, I infinite combo. Yeah, you get
Raven's Crime, Flame Jab, like combos there too, like.
If nothing else, it'll be that deck that you doesn't work, and it's a tier 3, but it beats you in round 1 of a Modern Open. So at nothing else, this is what it is.
And you're the hero for the day because you salted that one guy
one
over.
One of us is going to walk off very angry about Gitrok Monster.
Yeah.
At the least. I'm already getting upset. What's the next one?
So the next one is Sin Prodder. It may or may not happen. It's kind of like Bob, but not... So it's still up in the air of how good this card is. Like, it's a card that's very either extremely busted or just not good, because it is a Punisher mechanic. But then also, I want to point out, this also works in Dredge, because what if you just reveal a Golgari Grave Troll? What does your opponent do? Like,
oh, they lose. I mean, that's it.
Like, and it's before the draw step too. So like, they don't want to put the Grave Troll in the yard, because then you just immediately get dredged, but they don't want to put it in your hand, because that'll put cards in your hand, so you just have, you know, more than 7 cards and discard a card, and like, yeah, it just gets awkward there too, so.
I mean, they give you the troll, and they still lose? It's pretty bad no matter which way you do it. Like, I'm thinking about it, I'm like, hey, look, free Lava Axe, put 6 in the yard, effectively drawing 2 to 3 cards, because there's 2 to 3 things I wanted in the yard. Cheese, dredging, more fun.
Yeah, I think I like this one the most in Jund, just because, I mean, it is a 3-drop, so Modern, you know, we're not always... There's usually the action on turn 3 is getting intense, it's starting to heat up, so I don't know if this guy's, like, effective enough as a 3-drop, because you're not going to get the effect until the next turn on turn 4. Now, again, Twin's out of the format, so turn 4 is not nearly as treacherous as it used to be, but I'm kind of, like, 50-50 on this card in Modern. Like, it's not something that I would want in a deck, so I'm just going to have to wait and see what other people do with it, and we'll find out.
Yeah, as far as Jund is concerned, this card is competing with Culligan's Command and Liliana the Veil, and I don't think it's really a competition there.
It could be like a 1 or 2 of, it's just like Bob's, you know, 5 and 6 or something too.
Like, it could be side out where, like, I'm trying to figure out what matchups Liliana is bad in off the top of my head, but I'm sure they exist, and the ones that they're bad, you're going to want Sin Prodder over her. So, yeah, that's your switch right there.
So the next one I want to talk about is just, like, It's not really power creep so much as just a card that's going to slip into Modern and sideboards. So, like, cards going to sideboards, like, for hate and things like that are weird because it's a little bit of a power creep, but it's kind of a hate card. But anyway, it's Invasive Surgery.
I hate this card.
One blue for an instant speed, counter-target sorcery. If you add Delirium, remove all copies of it. Search, you know, hand library and all that.
Counter-target ad nauseum.
No, you can't counter ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum's instant.
Oh, yeah, it is instant. Holy cow. Well,
yeah.
Counter-target Past in Flames.
Yeah.
GG.
Infernal Tutor. Scape Shift.
Yeah, Scape Shift. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, like, that's what it's for. So, like, this is obviously going to see other format play in metas where these decks are popular. So, it's kind of one of those weird ones. Is it power creep? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it is power creep because in comparison, the good comparison to this would either be Extirpate or Surgical Extraction, where you actually have to put yourself at a card disadvantage and get no actual retail out of the card. This not only stops the card from resolving, but gets rid of all other copies. That's just a little unfair. I think it's a little too much, a little too powerful, but it doesn't stop instants. So I think that's where it kind of balances itself. But at the same time, I've never liked cards like this. I'm gonna hose your strategy in one single shot and not care. I never really cared for those.
Yeah, and I agree. Like it's a hate card through and through. So whatever your opinions on hate cards are gonna apply to this. Moving down here, we got Griff's Boon, which is for Chris.
Griff's Boon.
We talked about it a little bit before. It may or may not go into Boggles. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think it depends on how much we see Bolt. If you're going to go on the path where you're going to take out Core Spirit Dancers and run Keen Sense for your card draw, but run Silhanna Ledgewalkers for evasion, I don't think it'll make it there. I think if you're going to keep on the Core Spirit Dancer, Slippery Boggle, Glade Cover Scout plan, but want to end the game faster by strategies that can kind of clog up the board, this is probably a better card because it's not trample, it's flying, but it's still evasion, which just gets right around the purpose of I'm just killing you faster.
Yeah.
And then Alex brought up the point, you can get it from the yard too. So somehow if it gets destroyed, I can pull it off the yard. So even a lonely little Glade Cover Scout can at least come out there and swing for two, probably unobstructed.
Yeah, I think it's just better in the late game that Boggles didn't have because, like, if you get engineered explosives or, you know, destroy all enchantments or something like that, like, you may have a creature, but that's it. So being able to cast these out of the yard, I think, is a long game that Boggles maybe didn't have, which is kind of why I kind of like it.
Yeah, it stacks really well with Rancor. So it's like, oh, boom, I blew up all your enchantments. All right, well, Rancor goes back to my hand, and now look, I have these other cards that I can cast from the graveyard sitting right there, and I got plenty of mana. I don't know what to do, so I'll just cast more enchantments. I'm very creative.
Yeah, so it's a card that helps you.
It's not a horrible card. I think we just have to see it where the modern's going to shake out.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of going with this, like, Shadows and Oath are definitely on, like, a down power. Like, this standard is definitely going to be, you know, kind of depowered to where it was in Cons, because Cons was forcing these cards to be played. Like, Cons wanted you to just play Siege Rhino, because that card was great. And, like, even, like, up to the end of rotation here, Rally's the best deck, and that's from Fate. Like, the Cons was super high power, and coming into low power, which is what standard does, it goes through these waves, kind of like an ocean, or like, riding, highs to low. So we're coming into a low power, but there's still cards in these sets that are, you know, such high power that it's kind of interesting. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes from them just pushing design space. I mean, look at that Thing in the Ice. Like, that's a bizarre card. It's very cool. I love it. Fits to this set great, but it does push the scale sort of on power level. And, I mean, it's one of those ones where, like, in a vacuum, it's hard to say if it's overpowered or not. But then once you start mixing it up in different decks, like, we're going to start to find out. But I think it's good. I think this set's a little bit, like, it plays well with itself very nicely, like you said, compared to Cons, where Cons was just like it. Cons never felt like a real set or a plane to me because it was basically a few home runs that you picked out of the batch, and then that was it, right? I mean, like, there's a lot of cards in Cons that I've completely forgotten about.
It also didn't help that fetch lands were printed in this set in Cons, because when fetch lands are printed, it makes mana perfect. There's just nothing you can do about that. So you're allowed to do whatever your heart desires. You want to play four color X? You could do it. You want to play a five color deck? Not completely unachievable, a little bit more difficult, but you can do it.
I mean, Bring to Light was a deck for a while. It's definitely doable.
Yep. So, I mean, fetch lands just, you know, it didn't help that those were around, and pulling those out of standard now makes deck construction actually, you know, a little more restrictive. You can't do whatever you want. A lot of people have been saying three colors is very hard to pull unless you're in multicolor Planeswalker because of the Oath of Nissa, how that kind of cheats on your mana right there. But outside of that, I mean, it creates a little constraint. I think it's a good thing. Really makes deck design. It really shows who the better deck builders are. Can you come up with something that really shines with what we have?
Yeah, it's sort of that. It brings up that is it worth it question. We're like, is this color worth it? Am I getting enough out of this color for this to be this two color pairing, or should I look elsewhere? And yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, I think we're going to see some interesting decks out of this standard. I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on here, we go to Pauper Paradise for your sec. Angelic Purge was a card that printed. I mean, it's common, so it's under a lot of radar for Constructed. But what it does is allows you to sacrifice a permanent and then exile target creature, enchantment, or artifact at common. So just a catch-all that Pauper hasn't had before. So I definitely think it's sweet.
So it was sacrifice a permanent, correct?
Yes.
Sacrifice a permanent you control. Just want to be sure. Okay, so then this card goes straight into Acid Trip.
Yeah,
you sacrifice your own Reality Acid to get target something, and Reality Acid hits the Yar, and you get to blow something up, play Oromancer, get your Acid back. Woo, blue white things, you know.
Yeah, and it also works well with like Ichor Wellspring and Chromatic Star, things that when they hit the graveyard, you draw a card.
Yep.
So he's gonna get double duty there. So it's pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, this card will see some.
And because
play.
It is catch all exile, like I can't think of anything else in Pauper that has an exile effect like this.
Yeah, no, I dig it. And yeah, anything that can like hit enchantments but also hits creatures, I always a big fan of, because usually you're hitting creatures, but you know there is that weird like enchantment that causes you problems here and there. So,
Tome or whatever.
Yeah,
a curse.
Hey, was Griff's Boon a common?
Was what common?
Was Griff's Boon the enchantment for Pauper in Modern? Because if it is a common, this goes right into that deck.
I'm pretty sure it's an uncommon.
Okay, we'll have to. I'll have to look on that.
I'm like 99% sure it's uncommon.
All right.
Well, but that was the big one I wanted to talk about for that. Just one card, but like it's such a sweet card for that format.
Yeah, definitely.
So I wanted to touch on it.
No, I was the only
color is it in, Alex?
It's white. It's two generic and one white.
It's good to go for Boggles then, because I'll just sacrifice Rancor.
Boggles got removed. Boggles got removal, guys. Watch out.
Yeah, right? I think it's going to be really sweet in the format for sure. Next, we'll go on down here to the ban-unban contest we did for the January ban unban. We've got another ban unban on the Monday of this cast, April 4th. So last time we had a 5-way tie. So we could retry here. Like, we know I or Temple is getting banned. But do we think anything else is going to go with it?
All right. What the question, Alex, is do you believe in this unban list that went around?
No. Okay. So there was
it was a joke. It was a joke.
Yeah, it was a joke. Okay, fantastic. Because that joke was because some people were taking it seriously. Yeah.
For anyone who heard this and didn't know what we're talking about,
Demonic Attorney was unbanned in Legacy. Like, that was the dead giveaway. It was a joke.
Okay, because for those of you who don't know, Demonic Attorney can never be unbanned because it has the word anti on it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so basically there's an absurd list that went around with all kinds of crazy unbannings on it, and some people thought it was real.
No, it was all bannings. It banned Temple, Skyspawner, Mimic, Thought Not Seer, Reality Smasher.
Oh, well, then there's two.
There's two lists.
Okay, because what we got was a little bit more. Okay, what we were told was there was a little list that was leaked, and the cards that were on it were as follows. Was I Gets Banned, and the unbannings were Ancestral Visions.
Nope.
Stoneforge Mystic,
nope.
Jace, nope. The Mind Sculptor, mm-mm. And Dig Through Time. No, I'm like, all right, there's only one of those cards that might get unbanned, and I'll give you a hint, it's not blue.
Yeah.
We will never unban that.
I think
that
the time
blue.
Passed for that already, too, so.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, what do you guys think? Is it going to be Eye or Temple or something else? Could it be Mimic? I don't know. What do you guys think? Jerry, start us off.
All right. So I want it to be Temple. This is my call, my official call. I want it to be Temple because if you take Eye out, you're hurting. Tron's going to catch splash damage. Now, do a lot of people like Tron? No, nope. But at the same time, I don't want to hurt the Tron players out of the format.
It's not going to hurt them out of the format.
Yeah, but I want...
They'll still play. They still have Tron lanes, so...
They still do, but they don't have that insane long game that they had where Eyes on the Battlefield, you know, being used what Eye was supposed to be used for. So I want Temple right. to be gone because I did a little testing, and you can still super cheat Eldrazi with Temples. You know, you go turn one Temple, Amulet of Vigor, turn two Vesava, copy the... Temple right, play Thought Not right, Seer
next.
Yeah, but it's a different cheese at that.
So, ban the Temple. There's just too much going on with Temple. I hate the card, and I think it needs to go. For an unban, I think Stoneforge will come off that list. I really think it will.
You think they're going to do it now instead of January? All right.
I think they're going to do it now. Yes.
All right.
I'm stepping up to the mic here. Stoneforge is not coming off the unban list just because right just now
immediately slapping Jerry down.
Well, right now, Wizards has to be in, like, the most cautious mode in regards to the unbanning list. I'd be very willing to bet that there is nothing coming off the unban list. Not because it shouldn't, but just because they've got to be shaking in their boots right now. I'm going with Eye of Ugin. I think that does more damage to the deck, and I think right now that Eldrazi's already had such a huge impact that I think they don't want to risk Temple not being hard enough of a ban. You know what I mean? So I'm going with Eye on this one.
What do you think, Chris? What do you got?
All right, so I think it is going to be the Eye. As much as I think it should be the Temple, I think the Temple is the smarter choice. I think the Eye is what's going to get the ban because that's all people have been screaming about how overpowerful the Eye is. All right. I almost wouldn't hesitate to say we might see another Eldrazi go on the ban list. I don't think it's going to be a Reality Smasher. I think TKS has a chance of hitting it. Because not only are we cheating it in, but realistically, at two mana, I'm Thoughtseizing you on a 4-4 body.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think if they go the route of banning Temple, we may see Temple plus one of the Eldrazi creatures.
And
Thought Not Seer's fair game. I think the Mimic might be fair game. I mean, I haven't played a lot of Modern since Eldrazi chased me away, so I don't know which pieces would do it the best. But I could see the best argument, I think, for not banning Eye is what Jerry said. Like, it hurts Tron players. Mm-hmm. And one, I don't want to see, like, as much as I hate playing against Tron, I don't want to see a deck get chased out of the format from splash banning. And also, Wizards has to be thinking about that, right? Like, we've knocked out so many decks in the last, like, 2 years now.
I don't know what the problem is. We've been telling people to play Boggles for, like, 6 months.
It's unbannable. Yeah, Wizards doesn't even know it exists.
They don't understand the true power of Slippery Boggles, so you're safe.
For me, I'm still going to say Eye. It's the one I've said the whole time. Just, it's the one that makes the most mana for not tapping and things like that. It's the one that's the most busted. And I mean, throwing back here to episode 20 was my pro tour prediction, and I said within a year Eye or Temple will be banned. It's the last prediction from that hasn't been met yet, and it's gonna get met on Monday. Yeah, so
all right, so Jerry, here's a chance for a clean sweep, man. If it's Temple, it's you beat us all.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
If it's Eye, we all beat Jerry.
I'm gonna throw on another little spice here. I think because they're going to ban Eye, and I think because of that, they're also going to attack other fast mana, and they're going to ban Simeon.
Oh, please don't say that. Mm. Oh, God, don't say that to me.
I think Simeon Spirit Guide is going to catch some splash here because it puts a hurt on Grishelbrand, the other turn two combo deck that they didn't catch before with Summerbloom. And also, in the beginning, Eldrazi was running it, so if you just ban Eye, then Eldrazi is going to go back to Simeon Spirit Guide and Temple and Chalice Plan and stuff like that. So I think Simeon's going to catch some splash damage here.
And see, you mentioned Grishelbrand. See, my problem with that deck is Grishelbrand is a card. Yawgmoth's Bargain is not legal in Legacy. Why is an 8/8 creature
a fine card as long as you're not cheating it in?
That's the problem. That's all Legacy is.
For 7 minutes. Sorry.
I mean, there's an abundance of ways to cheat it in, from reanimate, Eureka, Hypergenesis, Show and Tell, Sneak Attack. I mean, there's just way too many ways
modern.
To do it.
Fucking modern. Those are your legacy cards cheating.
I mean, that's reasonable, but we still have, you know, cheap reanimation tricks that are cheating in Yawgmoth's Bargain. Like, I don't think that should be legal in modern to begin with.
You got them all wiled up by saying Simeon Spirit Guide.
I hate Griselbrand. I hate the cards. So, I'm just coming out with that.
And I just have one question. If Spirit Guide does not get the ban come next, what is it, January? And people are still playing shenanigans with Spirit Guide, does Chalice start getting looked at? Because now you're playing oppressive, uninteractive magic.
Simeon is what makes Chalice oppressive, because you can get it out on turn one, on one, so your opponent just, like, if you're on the play, your opponent just has no chance to interact.
And that's
the problem.
And Chalice is a problem card in and of itself, because it's zero, man. It hoses certain decks out there.
True.
Yeah, but I mean, this is getting in. Like, I always want to see the list be less ban heavy and more, like, you really just want to ban when necessary. And I mean, Blood Moon was a huge target that basically escaped because of the Eldrazi menace. Like, no one's even talking about banning Blood Moon anymore, and that was all anyone talked about for a long time. So,
I mean, Blood Moon
maybe we see a Blood Moon ban.
Blood Moon became the hero.
Yeah, Blood Moon became our savior. Yeah. It's so weird how that just worked out.
Blood Moon is the Batman, all right?
It had a great PR day. Everyone loves Blood Moon now.
But my unbanned prediction is still Deathrite Shaman.
It's never going to happen.
And Green Sun Zenith. Those will be unbanned come April.
And people
are like, oh, you thought the Drazi was a problem? Have fun getting stomped on by elves.
I'd like to see Stoneforge Mystic, like, despite what I said. I don't think it's going to happen, but I do. That would be sweet.
Yeah.
So can we go over one more time what our official calls are?
I don't think we have official. This is a for funsies.
I like it. Officially fun.
Nothing's getting unbanned. That's the reality.
Yeah, no unbanned Iron Simeon.
There's your official call.
All right. So Alex, Iron Simeon. All right. Jerry's Temple and?
Temple gone, Stoneforge back.
Chris?
I think it's crazy next. I think it's going to be I banned with a good possibility of, I want to say, Thought Not Seer. Unbanned is realistically going to be nothing.
Wait, how many choices did he make? He made two choices.
Yeah. Four. You're done. You're cut off.
All right. No, I like that. Chris, you think they're going to ban ITKS?
Yeah.
Cool.
But nothing will get unbanned.
ITKS. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and go with Ive, Ugin, and Temple. Hedge my bet a little bit.
Ooh. All right,
you are. I'll get 1 point.
Stomping an entire deck out.
Hedge my bet.
You want to play the Drazi? You play him at cost.
He's playing the odds, man. He's playing the odds. He's going to get one right.
I'll get 1 point.
There's a chance he's going to beat somebody in this. All right.
We'll be last.
So let's do some quick card cost theory here. We talked about it two episodes ago. I don't even remember anymore. Jerry was all about it.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about how do we evaluate card cost on flips / transform cards? Because they are hard to evaluate. We were just talking about Thing in the Ice. So we'll continue to talk about that. Like, for 2 mana, it's an 0/4 that comes in and doesn't draw a card like all of them. So I would consider it underpowered for 2 mana. Like, if it's just strictly 2 mana, it's pretty underpowered. But then that flip side, man, ugh. Like, we were talking about the things it does, man. What do you think, Jerry? You're the card cost guy here.
Okay, so with flip cards, I already look at them with slightly, like, you put Thing in the Ice out as just a 2-mana 0/4, but its flip side has an evacuation effect, and evacuation was a 5-mana spell. Now, it's a little bit more restrictive, and horror is a relevant creature type in the format, so I could knock a price off that and say that's a 4-mana version of a flip effect. That, and you're getting a 7/8. So in a 7/8 where you've only paid 2 mana and you've played a handful of spells, it seems really easy to get going. Most 7/8s tend to cost 7-6 mana. So a 7/8 with evacuation attached to it would be like a 9 or 10 drop. The fact that you're only playing 2 mana and you only need to play magic to flip this is insane to me.
Yeah, I
agree.
It's a little bit build around, so I could see that, because you definitely, like, I think this card, if it doesn't flip, like what Alex was kind of getting to, it's undervalued, right? So you're assuming it's going to flip to get this you know, higher casting cost out of it. But yeah, when it does flip, it's insane. So it's tricky.
And you see, we said Delver's Secrets way back in original Innistrad that, oh, this card's so build around me, I don't think it's going to be good. Turns out it's the best thing you can do, and one of the best things you can do in Legacy. This might be the new variation of a Delver deck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't mean to say that it's not going to be good to build around it. I think you can definitely build around it, but there has to be some price associated with the fact that you do have to build around it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just slot it in.
It's kind of the same as Delver. Like, there's a minimum that you have to hit of instants and sorceries that you're able to cast. Like, Delver, you want to have a certain amount of instant sorceries to increase your chance of hitting one to flip it and things like that. So, like, I get what you're saying, it's built around like that. But also, we have to consider, this is in Standard, and it's probably going to be playing in Modern. So, like, those are two different costs of flipping. Like, in Standard, the average cost of, like, an instant or sorcery is going to be, like, two or three. And in Modern, it's one, maybe two.
Yeah, sometimes free.
Yeah.
So, in Modern, it's even better there because of your free spells.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's weird, though, because, like, in Modern, it's better, but you're generally not going as many turns. So, that kind of self-adjusts, you know what I mean, in a way. So...
This does allow you to catch up. Like, when it flips, it catches you up on the back. Like, yeah. So, like I said, evaluating these cards is tricky. Because, like, you have to evaluate both sides a little bit. You have to evaluate the front and the back, I guess. So, another one here. Let's talk about Archangel Avacyn. So, on the front, it's just three generic white for a 4/4. Flying, Flash, Vigilance. When it comes into play, all your creatures get indestructible. And if anything dies, you flip it.
What a deal.
So, I mean, on the front, three white, that's Sarah Angel, which was 4/4 Flying Vigilant, which was played for years. Then got downgraded to uncommon for rare. Like, Sarah Angel bit the bullet on that one.
Yep.
Yeah, real bullet biting.
Yeah. But this one adds Flash and gives things indestructible. So already it's passing Sarah Angel, which was like a standard stock. We know it's good. We know it was playable. It was played... at a time, so this kind of catches it up to where. What do you think, Jerry, on that one?
So to start, this card shows what power creep really has done. You know, Sarah Angel used to be the paltry standard of what a good card was. Sarah Angel in card cost theory was undercosted. You were getting 4 power and 4 toughness, which is approximately 4 mana with flying and vigilance attached to it. Each ability costing an additional mana, so you were paying 5/4, essentially a 6-drop.
Yeah.
So. That right there in and of itself is good. The fact that we just jammed Flash onto this made an indestructible effect. And then the other effect is a little bit weird because it's a non-bow with itself, which I guess is a good thing. And they even made it to where you can't just play another Avacyn Angel to sacrifice an Avacyn Angel. You can't do that. So that won't trigger it either. So I look at those two abilities themselves because they're a non-bow. I kind of just add one more to the cost instead of like a normal 2. So to me, this feels almost like a 7 or an 8 drop that got costed at 5. And Flash to me is almost one, it's like 1 mana or 2 mana, because making anything instant speed is one of the most powerful things you can do in Magic.
Yeah,
just the ability to leave up mana on your opponent's turn is always great.
And I didn't even get on the flip side of this. Like the
that's what we'll get on here now. Because like I said, we have to evaluate each side kind of individually. And then kind of like an assess a cost of flip is kind of how I see it. So like on the other side, we have Avacyn the Purifier, which is 6/5 flyer for no mana, whatever the flip, you know. And when it enters the battlefield, 3 damage to your opponent and all creatures. So typically like a 6/5 flyer, that would be like a 6-drop for like a vanilla.
Yeah, 5.5, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And then you get an enter battlefield effect of 3 damage to opponent and all creatures. We don't really have an effect like that, like a card that we can
You have Anger of the Gods at 3 for the 3 damage, and then a Lightning Bolt at the cheapest it's ever been.
Like, yeah. The closest thing I could compare that effect to is a one-sided Slag Storm that you get both effects on.
Sure.
Like, it's pretty much... Because let's think here.
It's a weird... So I would give it, like, 3 to 4 as a cost. Like, it's a Anger of the Gods, but not... To the players, like at a bolt, so like 4 maybe. So we're looking at like a 10 to 11 cost on that side, roughly.
Yep.
We know it costs 5 on the front, So, like, the cost to flip, do we think that cost to flip is 5 to make it up to this 10 power, or is it under-costed on that, too?
Oh, it's under-costed. It's just the flip isn't really that hard to pull off in this set, especially with, you know, we still have Nantucko Husk, which exists. So yeah. It's under-costed, super easy to get off. I give them props on the design for making it non-bowish and the ability for you not to just jam two legendaries. Like, they made it fair in that aspect. But still under-costed. Yeah. The card should be 8 to 9 mana on card cost theory.
Yeah. Well, like, that's the thing, though, too. Like, because you want to flip this at instant speed, usually, to, like, hit your at end of your opponent's turn and stuff like that, you have to have a sacrifice outlet. So that makes it a little bit build around. So that kind of adds a cost, in my opinion. Like, you have to play an Nantucko Husk and another creature to be able to sack. So, like, you have to have spent more mana to get this effect, though.
Yeah. No, I like it. I almost wonder if they added the indestructible ability when it enters the battlefield after they designed the card, because this would be a sweet one to, like, oh, your opponent swings in and you chump block with a weak dude, and then in response cast this creature, your guy dies, flip your angel, wipe their, you know what I mean? Like, without the indestructible clause, this card gets ridiculous with flash on it.
Yeah, so it definitely feels like that was something that was added on to stop just super shenanigans.
Crazy shenanigans.
It feels so weird because you put on a really good ability to make it not super shenanigans.
To nerf a card. Yeah, that's the definition of power creep right there. Holy cow. But yeah, because, I mean, like you said, like there's times when the indestructible is going to be a hindrance because, yeah, I would love to swing in with a weak creature and then, haha, gotcha. And then, I mean, can you think of standard where you're getting free damage in with little dudes because they're too scared you're going to block and flip your angel, like flash it in? But,
well, that's the other thing, too, is now your opponent is afraid to attack. If you're like a 1-1 in play, they don't want to attack because you can just flash in a, you know, chump block, flash in the angel, and then flip it immediately or whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is funny, but, yeah, I think you got a good ability to avoid it being more broken somehow.
Yeah. No, I definitely see how that ability got added on because of that. But, all right, I think that's bringing us pretty close to time here for this one. Do you guys got anything to throw on here at the end?
No.
No, just nope. Clean. That's it.
Done.
We're done. No last minute shenanigans. Oh man, is Chris even awake?
I got something.
I don't know.
I got something. We did.
All right. What do you got?
We did talk about this a little bit before the show.
Yep.
I mentioned the Mizzix Mastery combo list for Legacy.
Sure.
As how the deck works is you play a bunch of cantrips and Force of Wills to protect yourself, and you want to get Enter the Infinite in your graveyard, which is a 11 or 12 mana sorcery. Don't know how much it costs because you never actually cast it for that. Draw your entire deck and put one card from your hand on top of your deck, and that's the rest of your deck. And the way you try to cheat that is you want to play Mizzix's Mastery, which was a rare from the Mizzix Commander deck. It's the only place it's ever been printed, where it's a 4 mana, 3 generic and 1 red, to exile an instant or sorcery from your graveyard, and you may cast it without paying its cost, and you can overload it for 6 colorless and 3 red. What you want to do is get Enter the Infinite in your yard, play Mizzix Mastery, do it, deck in hand, and then go with either Lightning Storm or Conflagrate like Ad Nauseam does in Modern. I look at this deck and say, right now, as long as Mizzix Mastery is on the low, this is kind of a way to start building into a show-and-tell sneak attack list without having to invest in huge amounts of money with your Gristlebrands, Emrakuls, the sneaks, and the shows. You still need your land base, which is Valks and Scalds, but the deck doesn't play Wastelands, and it plays, you know, we prefer Scalding Tarn, but if you don't have that, you can still get away with playing blue fetches. And
you can even substitute, it runs a couple of Misties, you can substitute those for Flooded Strands to get a little bit cheaper too. So
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there's definitely ways to build it budgety. But yeah, I like it because, like, I feel like this was a combo that somebody pulled off in Commander because the Mizzix card is only a Commander card. And somebody went, wait a minute, this is just like show and tell, but different. Like, yeah.
So it was a neat deck. It's cropped up a few times in a couple of winning lists. And, I don't know. I think you should all pick up the cards while they're on the low.
Yeah. No, it's definitely sweet. I dig it. We were talking about it before. I think I like it better than Omnitail because, like, having to assemble, like, a hand that's show and tell and omniscience and some backup. Like, this is just you faith the saluting or is it charm, throw Enter the Infinite in the yard and then get to it eventually. Like, it feels a lot easier to assemble that kind of combo.
That was my 2 cents.
All right. Is Chris awake? Does he got anything?
No, I am good.
He's good. All right.
Yeah, I do just want to say
it. Let's do it for us this week, guys.
Yeah, hang on 1 second. I got one more.
Oh, yeah, one more. All right.
My hand's up, but you can't see me. Mostly just want to say sorry again. I know that the episode's going up a little bit late this week. We've been having to do a bunch of shifting around, and I'm in month end for work, so it's been crazy. And also just, you know, we thank you for your patience. Bear with us over the next few weeks. Surely something is going to go wrong at some point. We had a heck of a time tonight trying to get Jerry's laptop set up to record and get him all squared away. So just anything that goes wrong, bear with us. We've got this. We're going to figure it out. But hopefully it's going to be smooth sailing. We'll see, though.
All right. I mean, you got it. You took that so nice. Just take us out, Bobby. Take us out.
All right. So for the last time as host for now, until possibly later or perhaps not, who knows? That's it for us this week. This is the Snapcast. We'll see you guys later. Bye.
Oh, snap.